Jai Maturanam ki jai. Okay. Tataha thereafter. Abhipadya attacking. Avyahanat struck. Maha Atsuraha the great demon Haranyakashipu. Rusha with anger. Nrsingham Lord Nrsingadeva. Gadaya by his club. Uruvegaya moving with great force. Tam him Haranyakashipu. Vikramantam showing his prowess. Sagadam with his club. Gadadadaha Lord Nrsingadeva, who also holds a club in his hand. Maha Uragam, a great snake. Tarkshasutaha, a Garuda, the son of Tarksha. Yata, just as. Agrahit, captured. Translation, thereafter the great demon Haranyakashipu, who was extremely angry, swiftly attacked Nrsingadeva with his club and began to beat him. Lord Nrsingadeva, however, captured the great demon along with his club, just as Garuda might capture a great snake. So you can repeat. Thereafter the great demon Haranyakashipu, who was extremely angry, swiftly attacked Nrsingadeva with his club and began to beat him. Lord Nrsingadeva, however, captured the great demon along with his club, just as Garuda might capture a great snake. So there's no purport to this text, so we're going to read text 26, and I think we'll also read text 27. Okay, text 26. Satasya hasto kalitastara suro vikridito yadvara hirgarutmataha asadvamanyanta rithaukasomara gonachudo bharata sarvadishnyatpaha. O Yudhisthira, O great son of Bharata, when Lord Nrsingadeva gave Haranyakashipu a chance to slip from his hand, just as Garuda sometimes plays with a snake and lets it slip from his mouth, the demigods who had lost their abodes and were hiding behind the clouds for fear of the demon did not consider that incident very good. Indeed, they were perturbed. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When Haranyakashipu was in the process of being killed by Lord Nrsingadeva, the Lord gave the demon a chance to slip from his clutches. This incident was not very much appreciated by the demigods, for they were greatly afraid of Haranyakashipu. They knew that if somehow or other Haranyakashipu escaped from Nrsingadeva's hands and saw that demigods were looking forward to his death with great pleasure, he would take revenge upon them. Therefore, they were very much afraid. And so finally we'll read text 27. Tam manyamano nijavirya sankitam yad dashta mukto nriharim mahasuraha punastam asajata kada charmani abhragriya vegena gatashramo mrade. When Haranyakashipu was freed from the hands of Nrsingadeva, he falsely thought that the Lord was afraid of his prowess. Therefore, after taking a little rest from the fight, he took up his sword and shield and again attacked the Lord with great force. So Srila Prabhupada explains that when a sinful man enjoys material facilities, foolish people sometimes think, how is it that this sinful man is enjoying whereas the pious man is suffering? By the will of the Supreme, a sinful man is sometimes given the chance to enjoy the material world as if he were not under the clutches of material nature, just so that he may be fooled. A sinful man who acts against the laws of nature must be punished. And sometimes he is given a chance to play, exactly like Hiranyakashipu when he was released from the hands of Nrisimhadeva. Hiranyakashipu was destined to be ultimately killed by Nrisimhadeva, but just to see the fun, the Lord gave him a chance to slip from his hands. So, Omagana Timurandasha, Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Meditam, Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, there's several things going on here. One is, of course, the description of Hiranyakashipu's interactions with Lord Nrisimhadev and why Lord Nrisimhadev is letting him slip. And then also the interactions of an ordinary demon with the material energy and why the Lord allows that ordinary demon to supposedly enjoy for some period of time. Okay, so let's talk about the first point, which is why Lord Nrisimhadev was allowing Hiranyakashipu to slip from his hands. Now, there's several reasons for that. Of course, the obvious reason is that, as described here in the purport, that Garuda sometimes allows a snake to slip from his beak. Of course, Garuda doesn't have hands, he has claws. And in this way, he's enjoying the interplay with his food. He's playing with his food. Just like little kids sometimes will play with their food. Or, as we've seen many times, when we were young, we used to have a pet cat. The cat would actually play with a rat or with a bird or whatever it caught. Many of you who have had cats before understand what I'm talking about. And sometimes the cat will actually take a bird or take a rat or take a snake or whatever the cat is eating, and the cat will bring it to its master while it's still alive, which is really interesting. He drops it off. I've had my cat, not that I have a cat now, but when I was young I had a cat. My cat just bring me birds all the time, half dead, you know, the birds that couldn't move. And it was very nasty, and therefore I gave up having cats after a while because of that. So there's this playful activity. So the Lord is very playful. As we mentioned yesterday, the Lord is enjoying anger. The Lord is enjoying chivalry. The Lord is enjoying these exchanges, the chivalrous, angry, ghastly. We're talking about the indirect rasas yesterday. The Lord is enjoying those in relationship with his devotees. The Lord himself enjoys doing it with his devotee, but when it comes to a non-devotee, he lets the material energy take care of this stuff. For example, when the Lord was attacked or challenged by this demon Kalyavan, and he was actually a demon, he wasn't a devotee, like in the case of Hiranyakashipu or Ravana or Kumbhakarna or any of these other demons, the Lord didn't even want to bother with him. He let his devotee kill Kalyavana, because the story is that Kalyavana was challenging the Lord, and then Krishna just kept running away from him. Of course, this is another example of something like Ranchorji, where Krishna ran away from this Jarasandha. Krishna and Balaram ran away from Jarasandha. They defeated Jarasandha so many times, but then ultimately they ran away and they climbed this big mountain 90 miles high and they jumped off the mountain and they escaped to Dwarka. And so Krishna is known as Ranchorji for that reason. Ranchorji means basically he ran away. And so that's sometimes taken as a symptom of the Lord's opulence of renunciation. In other words, he's renounced even from his reputation. Sometimes you see people very attached to reputation, you know, what will people think of me, etc., like that. It's nonsense. It's actually complete nonsense. What do people think? We should think, what does Krishna think of me? What does my guru think of me? Not like, what do people think of me? Except, you know, if they're advanced devotees. But the ordinary people, you know, they may like me or not like me, like Lord Rishabhadev. He took up this Jata Yoga process just so the people could spit on him and pass air in front of him and do all sorts of obnoxious things so he'll become detached from this world. So sometimes Krishna arranges that for a devotee. So getting back to the point, so Krishna is known as Ranchorji. And in the case of Kalyavana, and also Jarasandha, he didn't directly kill him, he had his devotees killed. Like Jarasandha was killed by Bhimsen, who was able to bifurcate Jarasandha, pulling his two legs apart. And because Jarasandha was joined at birth by this witch Jara, because he was born in two parts from two different ladies. So in the case of Kalyavana, Krishna was running away, and Kalyavana was making fun of him. Why are you running away, Krishna? Krishna ran away into a cave, and he hid in that cave. But also in that cave was Krishna's great devotee, Muchukunda. It's not Muchikunda. Sometimes people pronounce this demon's name wrong. They say Muchikunda. It's Muchukunda. It was not a demon, I'm sorry. It was a great devotee, Muchukunda. Muchukunda had previously been fighting for the demigods, and he got the benediction after he fought for the demigods that he could take a long rest. It's like sometimes devotees get really exhausted and they say, you know, I need to rest. And don't let anyone disturb me. Don't let anyone kill me. I mean, whatever. So Muchukunda got the benediction. If someone disturbed him, he could just look at them and burn them to ashes. And so Krishna understood this. And Krishna went running into the cave. And this demon, Kalyavana, came across Muchukunda. He thought it was Krishna because Muchukunda was covered with a cloth. Sometimes they say Krishna actually covered Muchukunda with his own cloth so that people would think, or that Kalyavana would think, Muchukunda was actually Krishna. And so Kalyavana kicked Muchukunda, and guess what? He was burned to ashes by Muchukunda's glance, and then Muchukunda saw Krishna after that. He wasn't angry with Krishna, fortunately. And he prayed to Krishna. And that story is there in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So anyway, so Krishna enjoys this sort of rasika exchange with his devotee. His devotees are Ranyakashipu, you know, Jai and Vijay. So he's enjoying playing with him like that. Because what would be the fun of a fight where the enemy just like gets killed immediately or surrenders? I mean, who would go to see a boxing match where in the first 1 second of the first round, it's won? Nobody would want to go to see that boxing match, right? No. Or just like when a football game, I don't know. How many innings is baseball? Anyway, I don't know anything about football. But baseball, I guess you have 9 innings. And then it goes for 9 innings. Even if the other team happens to be winning for 8 of the innings, then it still goes for 9 innings until you have the final conclusion. And the same thing with football, I guess it's 4 quarters or something like that. Does anyone know about football here? What? I think it's 4 quarters. Yeah, there's a halftime, and there's a little dance at the halftime. A little dance where the band comes out, you know, your high school band comes out and toots their horns and does some fancy dancing at the middle of the halftime. And so, in other words, it's prolonged. In this way, you know, there's fun. So Krishna wants to prolong this interaction. You know, he arranged for Hiranyakashipu to come down or Jayan Vijay to come down, so he's not going to just wipe him out in 1 second, because he wants to enjoy back and forth, the chivalrous, ghastly, anger, and even fear, you know, bhaya. Of course, Krishna is not fearful, but Hiranyakashipu is fearful. Bhaya is also one of the indirect rasas. So you have these interesting indirect rasas. So it's like a mixture of spices. Or just like if one has a nice meal, one doesn't wolf it down. You understand? Wolf it down. In other words, one doesn't eat it quickly. One relishes. Like we see when Prabhupada was taking prasadam, he would relish the prasadam. He would chew it very, very slowly. Where sometimes we see devotees, instead of relishing prasadam, they're drinking down prasadam or gulping down prasadam. And Prabhupada, when he took prasadam, it was very quiet, and Prabhupada didn't talk to anyone. Prabhupada sometimes looked at the wall, and he just like took his time, you know, half an hour eating. It wasn't time for social life like many devotees we know. It was actually a time for relishing prasadam. So this particular interaction between Hiranyakashipu and Lord Nrsimhadev is something that Lord Nrsimhadev really wants to relish. And he planned the whole thing, so now it's time to have fun. And so this is fun. So that's one reason why he's doing it. Another reason why he's doing that, and here in the second verse we read today, it describes that the demigods were just like afraid. They were just like shivering, basically, because they thought this demon is going to escape from the hands of Lord Nrsimhadev, and then he's going to go after us, because we're just rooting for him. Just like in a game, you know, you find... you're rooting for a team, particular team. Go, Nrsimhadev, go, go, go. Like nowadays, of course, if there's a game, and you can tell there's a game because they have all these flags from the cars, and they're going down the street with the flags and screaming, and they're painting their faces in all sorts of different ways. You ever see that? Sometimes they paint their faces, they look like clowns, so they can look like the team, or at least worship the team. So the same way, because they want their team to win. Whether it's the UNC, whatever, at Bobcats or whatever team. What is the UNC team?
Rams. They have a Rams team.
Like, oh, Ram. UNC Rams or the North Carolina State Cockroaches. It doesn't matter. They just like get in, and they even have a mascot in the games. Mm-hmm. Dressed like their particular, you know, Ram or Cockroach or Bulldog or something like that. Kind of stupid. But all these things are perverted reflections of what is happening with the demigods watching Lord Nrsimhadev conquer Hiranyakashipu. So they're just sitting there in the bleachers, you know, which is the clouds, I guess, the demigod bleachers, and they're just going, go Nrsimhadev, go, 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 go Nrsimhadev, go, 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 you know, just like in a game. And Hiranyakashipu is looking at them from the corner of their eyes. Wait till I get these guys later on. It's just like sometimes you find even in these games, the player will get so angry at the fans, they'll attack the fans. You ever see that happen? No. Sometimes they'll jump over the fence between the bleachers and themselves and just beat up a fan because the fan was making fun of them. So these fans... Fan means the people who are rooting or want the winning team to win or the best team to win or their team to win. So these fans are actually rooting for Lord Nrsimhadev. And Hiranyakashipu is so powerful that he doesn't stay just within the stadium. He's ready to kill them afterwards if he wins, which he's not going to win, obviously. So this is going on, and this makes it fun for the demigods. Of course, they were afraid during the whole thing. And this also was part of the Lord's plan. First of all, they were afraid because they're Sakama devotees. And they didn't have faith, 100% faith in the Lord. You don't find the indication hear that Prahlad Maharaj was afraid. Do you? It doesn't say Prahlad Maharaj was afraid that, you know, Hiranyakashipu, his father, would win. He wasn't afraid. He was just saying, wow, this is fantastic. And basically he knew what was going to happen. He knew the end. He knew his father was going to be killed because he had faith in the Lord. But the demigods, they didn't have that complete faith. So Krishna was arranging to put them in anxiety so they could take shelter of him. And this actually occurs with us too, because basically we don't, at least most of us, don't have that complete faith that Krishna is God. I mean, it sounds like we do, you know, we say we do, complete faith that Krishna is God, but, you know, we're doing our Hare Krishna thing, but do we actually believe that God is there on the altar? Do you actually believe that the absolute supreme personality of Godhead, who is the source of the whole material world, who is the source of everything, aham sarvasya prabhavo matat sarvam pravartite iti matva vajanti mam buddha bhava samanvataha, according to the Bhagavad Gita. Do we actually believe that? No, we don't. So therefore, we get an anxiety. And we take shelter of our material intelligence, and we're in anxiety and making so many plans here and there, and just thinking, oh, what am I going to do with life? Of course, that doesn't mean that we tell Krishna to do everything. That we have to make some plans, we have to make some endeavor. But ultimately, as Krishna says, for every endeavor and the result, just depend upon him and work always under his protection. And also we understand that Nanyaschintayantomam Jayajanapariupasate Tesham Nichabaryuktamam Yogiksham Vahamyam, that if you're fully engaged in Krishna's service, Krishna will take care of you. He'll carry what you lack and he will preserve what you have. I mean, we have to have that faith. That's faith. Shraddha Shabde Vishar Sakahesu Dridanishya. And if you don't have that faith, of course, Shraddhana Purusha Dharma Shasha Parantapa Rapyamam Vivartante Mrichu Samsara Vartmani. So that's really the essential quality of devotional service, to have that full trust that yes, God is there. And not only he's on the altar, obviously, but he's there in his holy names. So we don't really take shelter of the holy names like we should be taking shelter. We don't have faith in the holy names like we should have faith in the holy names. We get an anxiety, we get angry. So many things happen because we're not really taking shelter of the holy names. One thing I've experienced is that if you're really Krishna conscious, when the going gets tough, you start chanting more. You don't chant less. I mean, sometimes people get an anxiety, they eat more. That's a way, you know, medicate, self-medication of anxiety or unfulfilled needs. You just eat more. You know, you have a need for love, eat more. You're in anxiety, eat more. You're angry, eat more. Really, it's not a good strategy. So any of these things, you just chant more. I mean, it's not that you have to chant exactly more rounds every day. You could if you want. But you chant throughout the day. I remember when I first joined the movement, I mean, I was so happy to be in the Krishna Conscious Movement. I was chanting 24 hours a day. At night I would be chanting in my mind or chanting out loud, much to the chagrin of the other brahmacharis. So I'd be chanting. You know, just all day long, just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then after a while, you become complacent. You just like, you know, let your mind wander, do this. Because we don't really have faith in Krishna's names. I mean, everything is there. Purna, Shuddha, Nitya Mukto, Vinatvam, Namanami, no. What does that mean? Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. That the holy name of Krishna is perfect, Purna. Complete. It's a desire tree, you know, Chintamani. You know, so just basically a desire stone. That's not a tree. Kalpavriksha is a tree. And so, you know, basically you can contact Krishna at any minute. You can contact God. That's a pretty amazing thing, how we have the ability, because we've been initiated with the holy name, to contact God in any minute and talk to him. But we don't believe it. We just think, oh, Hare Krishna. We should really believe that. I can contact God. I have a direct line. You know, like the Russians and the Americans, they have this hotline. You know, there's some problem, they just call, hey, Khrushchev. Of course, that was a long time ago. You just call him, hey, the bomb's coming. So, in the same way, we have a direct line with God. So the demigods, they didn't have that full faith. They're like us. You know, basically we don't have that full faith. We have some desire to fulfill. So therefore, you know, we get an anxiety. And then here the demigods are in anxiety. Where's Prahlad Maharaj? No anxiety. No stress. No anxiety. He's just like happy as a lark. Seeing his father get killed. Anyway, so... That's one point. The second point here is, why does the Lord allow demons, or people not devotees, rather than using the word demons, to do their nefarious activities or demoniac activities? Why? I mean, what is Krishna doing? What is where's the justice in the universe? The study of God's justice is called, technically, theodicy. Theos means God. Odyssey, you know, like, means the study. The study of the justice of God, or the understanding of the justice of God, the law of God. So, why is it that Krishna's allowing this? And then people are suffering because of these people's actions. I mean, you take all demons, even modern-day demons like Mussolini, Hitler... I won't mention any of the names. Stalin, I will mention. There's quite a few of them. And, you know, the people who are the Taliban. You know, what they do, and the ISIS. It's interesting that our farm community in Mississippi is called New Taliban. So when they had this 9/11 thing, when the Taliban... took down the Twin Towers in New York, and all the people in Mississippi were thinking we were a colony of the Taliban. Because it's called New Taliban. Isn't that New Taliban? New Taliban. Yeah, anyway, so it's not a very... So we almost changed the name. Thank God it's not called ISIS, New ISIS, or ISIL, or whatever. So, you know, why all these things happening, and where are the innocent people who were suffering because of that? Well, two things. Why does Krishna allow the demons to do these things? Not that he just wants them to do those things, but he wants them to get punished to do those things because they have free will, they have the opportunity to do those things, and he wants them to get rectified by the punishment which they're going to have to endure at the hands of Yamaraj, or even during this lifetime, or in future lifetimes. Of course, that's arranged by Yamaraj too. See, we also get instant karma, or karma within this lifetime. You know what I'm saying? Not that the karmic reactions are only given after death. You can get karmic reactions in this lifetime for things you do in this lifetime. You get karmic reactions in this lifetime for things that you did in previous lifetimes. Or you can get karmic reactions in subsequent or the next lifetimes for things you do in this lifetime or things you did in the past. You know, there's sinful desires, lying as seed, fructified, mature, almost mature, etc. Like that. So... that's to teach us a lesson. Yeah, you're given free will. Do what you want to do, and then you'll see the reaction. I mean, sometimes when I was young, my mother would say, when she didn't want me to do something, I was going to do it anyway. She said, all right, do it. and you'll see what happens. And sometimes the punishment was at her hands, and sometimes it was a natural punishment. Like, I hurt myself, something like that. And then I learned from those experiences. So you learn from those experiences. The subtle body actually learns. It's not that the gross body learns. That's why we can't remember things. We don't remember how we learn certain lessons, but still, we learn those lessons. Like, I don't remember how I learned to walk, but still I learned to walk. I don't remember how I learned the ABCs, but still I know the ABCs. You don't have to remember how you learned a lesson to have learned a lesson. That's a question sometimes people ask. Sometimes they say, how can you say that the karma or the reactions of karma are meant for teaching you certain things when you don't remember what you did or don't remember the reaction to that? Well, you don't have to. You don't have to. These are all impressions on the subtle body that actually teach you certain things from lifetime to lifetime. Then the second point here is, why are innocent people having to suffer because of what this demon Hiranyakashipu is doing, or what this demon Ussalini is doing, or what this demon whatever is doing? The answer is that people are not innocent. People are not innocent. I mean, everyone in this material world, nothing happens by accident, because people have done things in the past, and they're also getting their reactions. Let's say if Hiranyakashipu was an actual demon, and he was actually, just an actual demon, not a Krishna conscious demon, not a demon that was sent by Krishna, and he was torturing people like demons do in this world, then his next life, he would get tortured by demons. You understand? Because that's the reaction, the teaching, the reaction. So it's not that the people are not innocent in this world. Just the fact that we have a material body indicates that we're not innocent. That point was driven in very nicely when I was traveling many, many years ago with a sannyasi, who shall remain nameless, when I was a brahmachari. And he chastised me for something I didn't do. You ever get chastised for something you didn't do? It happens all the time. Not all the time, fortunately. I just didn't do it. And my reaction was, when I got accused and chastised for doing something, and I don't even remember what it was, it wasn't that important, was, I'm innocent. And he said, well, you have a material body. You're not innocent. Even if you didn't do this particular thing, you're guilty. That was interesting. A little traumatic, to say the least, that he was doing that. I'm not going to mention his name. I think you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, and of course I cried a little bit. But ultimately, what does they say? Hindsight is 20/20. Ultimately, after 50 years, I understand the point. I didn't understand it then. I was thinking, boy, this is a cruel and unusual punishment, which is forbidden in the U.S. Constitution. So, but I understood that, yes, I'm not innocent. And then this chastisement is there to help me advance in devotional service. Understand, I'm not innocent. So when a devotee, the final point I want to make is, everybody, or unless they're like pure devotees descended from the spiritual world, they have some reactions, or they're not innocent in this world. But sometimes you find great devotees subjected to these difficulties and tortures, like the Pandavas. And like Srila Prabhupada, for example, he was gored by a bull as he was attempting to preach Krishna consciousness. I'm not saying the bull was a demon. I mean, the bull was just doing what the bull does. That's why you have to be very, very careful when you go to the holy dham, because these animals, they actually go after you sometimes. I have a friend who was gored by a bull. He was just talking innocently in Radhakund, and then the bull just came up and just... And even Mother Krishnapuri was thrown up by the bull. Fortunately, she's so light, so she couldn't get gored. She was just thrown in the air 20 feet and did somersaults. Anyways, for those of us who weigh a sufficient amount of pounds, we would get gored. So why do these things happen to devotees? You know, why am I being subjected to so much distress at different times? You know, whether it's adhyatmik, adhivodik, adhidaivik. You know, distress doesn't only mean physical. There's mental distress and, you know, the nature and everything like that. It's really to bring us to the point, like with the demigods here, just like taking shelter of Krishna's holy names and deepening our Krishna consciousness. And in the case of pure devotees, this distress is there sometimes to glorify them, how they can overcome great obstacles. Like we hear about Prabhupada overcoming great obstacles, and we'll be speaking about that one of the future Sunday feasts, as a great hero. To Krishna showing that his devotee is the greatest hero, because we all like heroes. So on that happy note, expect distress. It will come.